Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.
Welcome in to Football 52 with UNC head football coach Ed Lamb. I am Brady Hull. Coach, first off, 2 weeks ago we teased it. Last week we said that there's a possibility, and today we can officially say the first game of the season against Weber State has been officially moved to a Friday night, so we can finally say it out loud.
A lot of decisions and permissions had to be made from the time where I very first brought it up, walked into Darren Dunn's office, athletic director, and said, hey, what do you think about if we can secure the final step on getting these lights, what do you think about moving the first game to a Thursday or Friday night? In part to try to keep the students in town and kind of get the season started off right. We don't want to generally compete with the high school games. Yeah. We want those high school players here at our games and their families. So, but there is a tradition at UNC of a pretty good subset of our student population to kind of, you know, quote unquote, head home to Denver or surrounding areas on the weekends. And so if we can kind of maybe have a chance to keep them on a Friday night, that's great. But there were a lot of decision makers, including Weber State, our first opponent, and the Big Sky and our television partner. So really glad to see it finally come to fruition.
Yeah, we talked about, you know, some of the hurdles you have to get through. It's not as simple as just saying, oh, we would like to move it to Friday. There's a lot of things that go into it. Yeah. You mentioned it with Weber State has to sign off on it. You know, the TV side of it, they have to be good with it. And you know, it affects your practice and the beginning of the season, too. So there's a lot of things that go into this. So I'm glad it all kind of lined up appropriately so we could get this done.
Football scheduling is interesting. Every other sport in our department, and every department, we're not unique in this. Every other sport, the coach is kind of running the show in terms of who they schedule, when they schedule. There's generally some university guidelines on playing what's called guarantee games and whether or not you can afford to actually pay teams to come into our venue. And so that's quite a bit of work for those guys. But in football, the universities do not allow the football coach to schedule those games. There's just too much at stake. It's resource intensive both ways for the travel team and the home team. And so it's typically a university endeavor.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited that we got it done. Now, I'm glad you brought up the, you know, we don't want to generally compete with the high school football side of things, because there are people that look at Friday night and say, oh, Friday night belongs to high school football. I personally
agree.
Love, you know, I grew up playing football, played on Friday night. I don't have a kid that plays football. So personally, it doesn't really affect me, but I get that there are a lot of people that are like, hey, football's a Friday night thing. But I can't lie to you as a fan, having football on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I'm not arguing that, because I'll be sitting my butt down turning the game on and knowing that the Bears are going to be isolated from a lot of the other teams I follow. For me personally, it's great. I get the gripe, though. What would you say to a lot of those people that are saying that kind of thing? Like, hey, I don't like this. It's competing with football, high school football.
I agree. We in general, in my mind, we would never do that again.
Yeah,
this would just be a first-time thing. We do get a tremendous advantage over our second opponent by getting one day extra of preparation. I originally proposed Thursday, but we have a volleyball match on Thursday night, and so didn't want to split our fans. And so it came down to some difficult decisions. But as I said before, we want the high school student athletes and recruits at our games on Saturday nights. And we want to be at those, especially those local games on Friday nights, and recruiting for the high schools at the high school games. So, yeah, it's definitely not going to be our pattern.
Well, and again, I think for what you're trying to do, you know, kick it off with a bang, get the students, because that's something, We had people on the text line last week, Coach, during the whole show. We were talking about the change to the Friday night, and we had some people really excited about it. Obviously, there's going to be a few that are like, let's chat about it. We're trying to cater to students. Well, that's the goal. Like, well, I went to a, you know, Kitzman had a meeting, a bunch of meeting of minds, whatever. I don't know why I was there, but it was about how do we engage the students a little bit more. And so that is something that we're working on, and UNC's been working on for years now. And this, to me, is a nice opportunity to see what that looks like.
Our players are working on it too. I mean, it's on all fronts. At the end of every semester, I personally call all of our players who go straight A's. If you get no B's or below, then I call them at the end of each semester and just, you know, congratulations, thanks, how are you doing? And there were several semesters where we only had two. We just had 11 this last term.
And it's quite the jump.
Yeah, if somebody doesn't think that's not making a difference, you know, because you have a sense when you're sitting in a class, even in a class of 50 to 100, you know who, especially the athletes, they stand out if they're not taking it very seriously. And so to have our team GPA higher than it's ever been, and to have so many guys pushing for that perfection mark, as you can imagine, there were dozens that were so close, you know, 1B. Yeah. And almost every one of those 11 guys had, you know, nearly the same story. Coach, I was so worried. I had an 89 in this math class, and I had to get it, pull it out in the last minute. That's kind of fun to hear them stress about something that a lot of people would consider not stress-worthy, but they want to be great.
Yeah. Well, no, I love that, too. Those are great stories because, you know, we talk about the football a lot of times, but that's that student part of it that is just – It's a lot to juggle. I mean, when I went to college, it was tough to just be a student, and I can't imagine everything that goes into being a student athlete. So when you have those guys that are successful on the field, but also keeping their grades up, man, that's the goal. That's what you're after.
And here, it's going to be 100% tied to our success. You know, we're not going out recruiting high profile, talented, ready made football players to win in the Big Sky. Other schools could maybe do that. That's just not our path. Our path is to recruit the overlooked, hardworking, high quality character that would respond to this type of challenge. Mm-hmm. And I think there's no better venue to take a look at that than the academic path.
Coach, as we're recording this, it's May 27th. June is right around the corner. That presents another shift for the UNC football program with your guys getting back into the fold here in a few days.
They are. We start up again next week with our summer training program, summer conditioning program, it's called. And it'll be 4 days a week of training all the way through basically until training camp starts. And then training camp goes all the way till the season, and the season goes all the way until the last playoff game. So I'm really excited for the boys to be back. I'm, you know, so far so good. Knock on wood, I haven't heard about anybody getting into any type of misbehavior or trouble or minor. You know, we've had guys have motorcycle accidents, pick up basketball. It's kind of, you know, for guys that age, let's say all guys, right?
Yeah,
maybe everybody, but. You know, you want to have a social life, you want to have fun, and I think there's some pressure for these guys to fit a whole summer into 1 month because
they're
coming back to train. And they're serious about training, they're excited about that too, but it also brings a structure that maybe they don't have right now. And so that lack of structure for me puts me, you know, makes me uneasy. I can't wait to see all the boys back and healthy and ready to go.
Yeah, well, and then it's, like you said, next week, that is a stretch too. That's a stretch to training camp, start of the season. So guys have to, you know, you got to lock in. They got to be ready to go here in a few days. It's crazy.
Yeah, just come back and set personal goals to get better every day. And that's really difficult to do. It's difficult to do in football. It's difficult to do in life. And so hopefully we can establish some of these habits and take advantage of these last couple of months of summer training.
And before we know it, we're going to be talking about conference, media days, all of that is going to be right around the corner too. Talk to me about that, Coach, and as far as, if we can, players that you've selected. I know that's always special because these aren't just good football players. These are guys you want to represent your team outward to different media members in the conference too.
Yeah, we've talked about being offensive line and defensive line built, and that will be our strength, and that will be where we rise and fall. And so we're going to take an offensive lineman and a defensive lineman. The Big Sky allows two player representatives to attend Big Sky Media Days. So that'll be in late July up in Spokane. And we're going to take Blake Westland from the defensive side. And Blake is one of those high academic performers, one of those guys that's just, you know, whether it's community service, academics, on the field, just seems to have a desire to do everything really well and then be able to follow through on that. High school quarterback who is now playing defense.
That's a crazy transition.
Yeah. Yeah. And from, you know, maybe 205, 210, and 6'3". And then, he's put on an inch. He's a full 6'4", if not taller, because he's a little bit taller than me now. And he's going about 265. So has just worked tremendously hard to get to where he's at. Finished last season as one of our best players and picked up right where he left off in spring ball. And then Levi Johnson from the offensive line. We took, Jack Zeeball is our center, and he's the highest rated player on PFF for whatever that's worth. We know he's a good player whether PFF agrees or not, but, that's a pretty big deal nowadays to be rated highly on
sure.
that. And
yeah.
he certainly would have had a giant market value had he chosen to kind of take that and put himself out in the transfer portal. But Z-Ball's a legacy guy. His parents played here. We've talked about that before, and he's really built that offensive line around him. And one of the key guys that's been there right from the start, starting since he was a freshman, is Levi Johnson. Levi's also been a special opportunity for us in recruiting because tremendous the student as well, and we had to battle against the Colorado School of Mines to get him, and intends to be an engineer. And UNC was able to kind of customize his visit and show him the path toward actually becoming an engineer, which is a bachelor's degree in engineering doesn't really get you anywhere, you know? Mm. So it's kind of like, becoming an MD, a doctor. You can major in Spanish or ceramics and then go to med school. It's not necessarily what you get your bachelor's degree in. So he saw that opportunity, and now he's been helping us recruit other guys that are planning to become engineers. And he's saying, yeah, you're not going to go work somewhere as an engineer, a certified engineer with a bachelor's degree in engineering. And so he's on that path right now, and he's playing Division I football, and he's really excelling. A big-time leader for us. I know he'll represent us well.
We always say offensive linemen are pretty smart. You know, there's a guy right there that is showing that. What does it say? Now, I know we've talked so much about what you perceive as going to be the strength of this team, and I think that's the way you've worked for a while with the Bears is the offensive line, the defensive line. But most of the time, it seems like, coaches are putting a quarterback in there. We see maybe a receiver. Maybe we see a linebacker, middle linebacker or something. You've got the blue collar dudes that maybe don't get a lot of that limelight, and they're going to go represent the Bears. I think it says a lot about this team. That's how you're building this team.
Yeah, I think it's our best path, all things considered with where we're at. That's where we can affect the most change in guys would be in the weight room, in the body weights. We can recruit that length and put the size on them, put the strength on them through hard work. And it doesn't make the quarterback position any less important, but at least in the way that we're trying to build it, we want to build it so that we've got the best race car and the quarterback just happens to be the driver.
Mm. And I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe, I don't know, maybe race car is not the right word for the way the Bears are built. Maybe it's more like Nash truck. Or even a demolition derby.
Yeah.
Mm. And we need a good driver, and that's the quarterback's going to be the one actually pulling all the levers and guiding the vehicle. But I see it like a sweepstakes in that quarterback battle. Like if you get to be at the wheel of this, the way this is built right now with the offensive and defensive line, 3+ all Big Sky caliber running backs, in my opinion. I mean, this thing can go.
Do we know who the starting quarterback is yet, Coach? I mean,
yeah.
You can't blame me for trying.
Yeah, so it really ended, I think, in terms of a 1-2-3, a very close 1-2 with Kenny Luth and Keegan Patterson. And then, you know, Gavin came an incredibly long way in spring ball. We, you know, we were, when we initially recruited him, it was all just kind of based on speed, athleticism. We thought he can play somewhere. We got to take this guy as one of the best players in the state. And then, as it turns out, he just, I don't want to say exceeded our expectations, but he just got ahead of schedule to the point where we're saying, yeah, I mean, this, to get on the field, this guy doesn't need to move positions.
Yeah.
He's on pace. He's competing. And he did some really nice things at the quarterback position in the spring and opened a lot of people's eyes on, you know, on the coaching staff and his teammates.
Yeah, well, I'll be excited to follow that one along, too. Obviously, there's so many different position groups we've focused on, we've talked about, but quarterback, that's one of those. It's always going to be a question mark, especially after what you guys dealt with last year, the revolving door of quarterbacks because of injuries
every year
that you had to deal with. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Coach, what else is next for the schedule as far as what the next couple of weeks looks like for you and the coaching staff?
So the other thing we did this week is named a. There's a Big Sky Coaches Academy so each coach, each head coach in the Big Sky, in addition to bringing players to Big Sky Media Days, also will bring an assistant. It's generally going to be your top assistant, the assistant that you believe has head coaching potential in the near future. And for us, that's going to be Aaron Fernandez. He's coached on both sides of the ball. He was a player for me at Southern Utah and then became a coach, coached on the offensive line for almost 10 years there. And he's done a tremendous job transitioning over to the defensive line and has really helped Preston Hadley in his kind of first Division I coordinating experience because Aaron really understands the ins and outs of offensive philosophy and offensive line blocking schemes. And that's such a big part of it, being a defensive coordinator, is understanding that. So Aaron's our associate head coach, and he you know, on a daily basis, we talk about overall program type of viewpoint, and he gives me really valuable feedback. And so he's going to represent us at that. There are mock interviews with athletic directors around the Big Sky. Mm. There are some roundtables, small roundtables, where these assistants will kind of rotate through head coaches. I've done that before. Been the head coach. That's, you know, they just basically ask you anything they want to ask, and you get to know them a little bit. And then they also sit in on the Big Sky head football coaches meeting with all the athletic directors, and it's just a really good opportunity for them to kind of see, okay, what is this all about? How does it work? How do the Big Sky head coaches interact with each other? So I'm excited for Aaron and that opportunity he has.
Aaron is, I know Aaron's been in here a couple of times, and I think he filled in for you once, Coach. There was a time when you took a break.
100%.
And Aaron came in. He was awesome to talk to. Watching him on the sidelines is a treat. And he just seems like one of those guys, those kind of ride or die kind of coaches. You've talked about that too, separating the friendship, the coach side of it. That's got to be one of those guys that is tough to separate that, because you guys, obviously, you were his coach for quite some time.
It's tough for all of those relationships. I know head coaches that say things like, oh, I can't get close to the guys because might have to fire them, and you know, I just don't hire guys that I don't know and have long history with and trust level, and so that dynamic just doesn't resonate with me. You know, I don't have any problem. You know, if I'm not happy with the direction that something's going, I don't have any problem having difficult conversations, confrontation. Don't have any problem even. I hate to use that term, but like I would micromanage a guy before I would fire him. Guys would quit before I would need to fire them.
Yeah,
because I would make it that hard on them. I'm not proud of that.
Actually,
it's just my dynamic. You know what I mean? I'm in it with these guys and their families, and the idea of saying, "Hey, this position group didn't play well, and it's your fault." Like, I'm right there with them every day. How can I point the finger at them when I'm right there? You know, in all decisions and having input all along the way.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense, actually, Coach. You know, it's a kind of a somber tone around the station. I don't know if you noticed it when you walked in and saw Brian and Tanner. The Avs getting swept officially last night. And
yeah, Tanner's off his game. You know, I normally get a link to the door. It makes me feel pretty official.
Yes.
You know, about 6:45, I get the link and, hey, there it is. Good morning, Tanner. And
yep.
Walk right in the building, you know, and today I had to, like, ring the doorbell like a common vagrant.
Yeah. And Tanner said, in a very somber tone, I forgot to give Coach the code.
Yeah.
I'm listening to these guys in the morning on the way over here, and it's bad. I mean, I don't know where we're going to go today, but it's been kind of a rough go for the professional teams, Coach.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Broncos, you had Bo Nix's ankle done.
Right.
Broncos lose AFC Championship, snowy game. Nuggets get knocked out in the first round, playing a bunch of backups against Minnesota. They're knocked out in the first round. And the Avalanche, who won the President's Trophy, the best team in hockey, get swept in the conference finals. It's a rough go around here. A lot of talk about changes being needed in the professional sports world, Coach.
There's no doubt about it. Yeah, we all know it doesn't take very long being in this business before you realize that as coaches, we get way too much credit when it's going well and way too much blame when it's going badly.
Yeah, well, and I kind of wanted to pick your brain about that, like some of the isms that are happening right now. Because we're in sports talk, you know, it's a lot of talk of, hey, who's to blame for the Avalanche? Well, can't be the general manager because he traded for a bunch of guys that were really good. You can't necessarily cut a bunch of players because they were great 90% of the season. Must be the coach. So I wanted to ask you, I'm a big Jared Bednar guy. I would have a hard time moving on from that guy. But I wanted to ask you about some of these cliche takes that we're hearing throughout talk radio, whatever, about Bednar, whatever. I keep hearing this one. The messaging is stale.
Yeah.
And I heard that about Michael Malone last year. I've heard it about coaches that are probably when they're there for close to a decade, close to 10 years, you start hearing the messaging is stale.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I mean, you know, putting it in my own frame of reference, you know, just like in college football that everyone has seen, but like, boy, it's was it 3-4 years ago that the whole Michigan fan base wanted Jim Harbaugh fired.
Yeah.
One of their own, you know, legend at Michigan as a player, had proven himself as a coach, is now considered one of the best all division, all level coaches that have ever coached the game, and yet they wanted to get rid of him. And then he breaks through with a national championship and now considered one of the best ever, right? Moves on to the NFL. Ryan Day.
Yeah.
Same. Yep. Lost to Michigan 2 years in a row. Messaging is stale. He can't win the big one. Born on third base, that kind of, you know, all that criticism. Mm. And then all of a sudden he wins, and then it's like the numbers, the stats all of a sudden completely flip. He's the winningest coach in NCAA history, right? And now he's got a national title under his belt. And so it can change so fast. But, you know, for me getting into the business to see guys like Lavelle Edwards pushed out, Bobby Bowden pushed out, you know, you just don't have, for us as coaches, we understand that this is not a meritocracy. We are not going to be directly hired, fired, promoted, given raises based on our merit. But what we can do is be a part of a team and affect it the most that we can, work hard at it, and enjoy the ride and the relationships. And that's, you know, that's where we're at. That's where our heads are at. Messaging getting stale is kind of, you know, like, but a month ago, he was the best messenger in the league.
Like they were hearing it a month ago. They were hearing it in rounds 1 and 2.
And then it's like, oh, well, he just can't win the big one.
Yeah. I want to ask you this with coaches. Because a lot of times it does seem like you'll see, whether it's at the pro level or the college level, a guy gets fired, not necessarily because they wanted to fire him, but because I got to do something.
Yeah.
Because the quarterback was fine. The players were fine. Got to do this. Michael Malone might not have been the problem for the Nuggets, but we got to do something or whatever. How often do you think that's when coaches really get fired, is when we get to the, we got to do something. Don't want to, but we have to make some kind of a change. And it's the easiest one is the coach.
You just look at, I mean, Andy Reid was fired. Personal friend, BYU guy, met him and talked to him several times, a very personable, kind, down-to-earth guy, fired from the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
And is he the best or one of the best NFL head coaches in history?
Yeah, you could make that case.
Yeah.
No question.
Bill Belichick, 6 Super Bowl rings, fired. Yeah, it just, I mean, there's a lifespan on it. And you just see it over and over and over. And here's the thing, you've maybe heard me say this before, but when you're losing as a coach, there's no criticism that doesn't sound valid. You could literally throw anything out there as a pundit, whether it's earned or not, right? Like somebody like you, you have earned your position by putting yourself out there. If you don't build an audience, if you don't have listeners and interaction on social media, et cetera, you probably lose your position, right?
Yeah.
But now, and when I was, you know, coming up in the business, that's the only kind of people that would criticize you because they're the only ones that had an audience. But now anyone can have an audience,
sure,
yeah, through social media, and there are no criticisms that don't sound pretty valid. You know, they're all pretty reasonable. Anybody that wants to criticize me can certainly find, you know, the stats to back it up.
I just think it's so, like, when I'm looking at the Avalanche, when I'm looking at some of these teams or, you know, whatever, you made it to basically the final four in your playoffs. You got swept. That sucks. Sweeps are no fun, whatever. But the other team that got there is pretty darn good too. And you're willing to say we're firing a coach and we're going to put a new coach in there that's going to have to rebuild the camaraderie, all this stuff, unless you promote within. I've always, unless I just don't like a coach, I don't agree with the philosophy, whatever, I've just really had a hard time with firing coaches when you're there at the end. You've made it to the end. Not quite the finals, but you're right there. Is a different guy really going to be the one to get you over the top? And I don't know the answer to that, but I've always just thought it was interesting, the firing of the coach. Now, if you're not making the playoffs, we all get that kind of stuff, whatever. But, yeah, man, you're deep. And it's just kind of fascinating to me.
Yeah, the tenures have certainly gotten shorter as the salaries have risen across all sports. You know, it just wasn't a profession typically where you would quit on a guy that quickly in the past. And now you know, not necessarily at FCS football, but as we're talking about the professional levels and the higher levels of college football, there's a lot of compensation. And so, yeah, you know, there's a very short trigger for that. And you can see with the hires that that athletic directors make, I mean, it's pretty absurd. You know, I'm a big fan of my athletic director who looked a little differently. You know, some people don't realize, you know, we talk about Southern Utah sometimes and the run we had there and how special it was. And people within the Big Sky still talk about that run.
Yeah.
People at Southern Utah and in Cedar City in the state of Utah, I left there still with a losing record. It took a long time to turn that program around, you know? And so Darren Dunn was looking for that, right? But it would have been so easy for Darren to hire a low-level assistant at Colorado or Colorado State, or to go to Montana State and get their second in command. You know what I mean? Those mm-hmm. are easy hires. People, there's, you know, head coaching jobs are cherished. And generally, I think the fan reaction to something like that would have been probably a lot more exciting than, you know, a guy like me. It's like anybody wants to look back and say, oh, he was a loser at Southern Utah. Okay, well, you can look at it any way that you want to look at it. You know, to me, we built a program that had never won a Division I championship, and we built them into a two-time champion. They won another championship the year after I left, you know, and that's what's going on here at Northern Colorado. I truly believe it.
What was that moment like when you first when this job came open, when it gets on your radar? To walk me right through it. That first moment you realized UNC job's open, I'm interested. What was that like?
Yeah, it is interesting. So just to put it in context, you know, I felt like we had that successful run at Southern Utah, and it was time for somebody else to take it. It was kind of perfect timing. We had just won the Big Sky outright in 2015, and then a good friend of mine, Kalani Sitake, former teammate, got the head coaching job at BYU. He was set to be a first-time head coach, so he was kind of, you know, like, hey, can we do this together? What do you think? You know, like, you want to come back home, so to speak. And so that was really attractive and fun and an honor for me to be back, you know, in the place that I played. But the whole time I was also looking at, okay, what's the next head coaching job? I was a finalist for several Mountain West head coaching positions and just, you know, didn't didn't win out for whatever reason. You know, New Mexico was always one that stood out because I felt like I did a really good job. And then they hired an alum. You know, they hired Danny Gonzalez.
Yeah.
And it was like, how was I going to beat him, right? Like, it just – it's sometimes it's there's a lot of opportunity, luck, politics that go into the head coaching positions. I've been – those have been working in my favor at times as well. So anyway, I was always looking for the next head coaching opportunity. I always knew that I could probably – if not pick a head coaching opportunity in the Big Sky, you know, become a finalist just by picking up the phone.
Yeah.
Right. And, but to me, it's never appealed to be, to me, to be, you know, the head coach at one of the places that's spending the most money and has the best resources and has always won. I'm trying to recreate what we were able to do at Southern Utah, which is to change a community, change a university, drive enrollment, just change the fortunes of a whole community. I mean, I don't want to overstate it, but I feel like the success there changed the whole community.
This is where I was talking to somebody about you the other day, Coach, kind of like you're a practice what you preach guy. When I hear you say, you know, hey, I wanted to go to a place where we could build it from the ground up. That is not coach speak. That is not, well, this was the only you could have. I mean, your success at Southern Utah, you're at BYU, you're applying for gigs like New Mexico, and we're seeing kind of they're kind of on the rise. You could have waited. You could have waited another year. Every year, we're talking about coaches getting fired because the messaging's stale, whatever it is. Every year, there's however many jobs. I don't know. Maybe there's 20 jobs available every single year. So you could have waited. Why didn't you wait? Why was it UNC that was – and I don't know if I've asked you this before, but – Your pedigree, your background said, I could have waited and got at the time, a better job.
It's such a different profession that way, especially once you start to become a head coach. And then there are a lot of older coaches that you see. If you really study staffs, you'll see a lot of former head coaches in assistant roles. And at that point in their career, it's just more about the people they're around.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see that. There was a time in my career when I wouldn't have been able to see that. Would have all been about how big is the stadium, how big is the paycheck, you know. And in my time, you know, in taking this job and in my time here, all kinds of opportunities I'm just not even looking at, not even considering, because the purpose of being specifically here is almost unique in the Big Sky. I mean, you take places like Cody Hawkins is a good friend. He's the head coach at Idaho State. He's doing a tremendous job there. I mean, they're turning that program. But Idaho State's been a national champion before. Idaho State's got one of the best game day facilities in the country, if not even the Big Sky, in their dome. You know, I mean, they have resources. They are doing it. He's trying to recapture a past glory. That's not the case here. You know what I mean? You can harken back to the Division II days, but it's a tough stretch sometimes to try to link those Division II days to the Division I challenge, right?
Mm-hmm.
And basically, UNC, I think the biggest lesson that I learned as I studied the UNC history and tradition, which that winning tradition was in the Division II era, they did it largely with local kids. And by the way, if you study CSU... the only time they've been good is with local kids.
Yeah.
And if you study Boulder, the only time they've been good is with Colorado kids as their base, or at least a chunk, you know, of what they did. And it's interesting that the coaches espouse that, and yet, you know, new coaches keep coming and going in the state and, you know, trying to recruit the heck out of Texas and Florida. So it's really interesting, you know, what can lead to success. I really believe in the path that we're on, as you can sense.
Well, why is that? I mean, you look at teams in the area, too. You mentioned that. Those local guys. Is that a mentality thing?
Yeah.
Is it guys that are like, I grew up around here. There's just going to be a little extra that I pour into this thing.
I think it's so many different dynamics all related to what you're saying. So, like, parents are close by. So there's a level of support.
Hmm. Yeah.
Even for those who, like, you're not going to build your 100% of your roster with Colorado kids. You know, there's always going to be guys coming from, you know, neighboring states or even across the country. But they also have a support network. You know, when, you know, typically as coaches, we all reach out to our position groups. I reach out to the whole team on Thanksgiving and things like that. hey, does anybody need a meal? Does anybody want to come over? Our guys are at their teammates' houses. You know, if they're from out of state and they're not going home, they're at their teammates' houses. We have that support is now building on game day just with friends and family. I think there is a more awareness. There's more pressure. If you're playing, you know, 50, 100 miles from home or closer, you know, your high school friends, teammates, coaches, they're very aware of what you're doing and how you're doing, and they're keeping track of you. It's just, it just creates a completely different dynamic and buy-in. And I do think there is somewhat of, hey, we represent each other. We played against each other in high school. I know your high school. We ran track against each other. We played basketball. And so we have a very close team. And so several dynamics related to, when I say, you've heard me use the phrase, a regional cohesiveness. That's what we have right now. It doesn't have to be Weld County. It doesn't have to be Northern Colorado. It doesn't have to be just Colorado. But the tighter we can bring that concentric circle of recruiting, I think the closer our team has the opportunity to get.
Well, I think especially now in this day and age of NIL, transfer portal, all that stuff, where it's harder for fans to latch on to players, you know, because that's part of being a fan is we like to pick out our players. Mm-hmm. You know, we like to look at certain guys. Oh, we're going to follow that guy's career all the way up. Oh, wait, he's gone. But this also really, really helps with that too, because a lot of your players, you know, there's Northern Colorado guys. They've been on our station before.
Yeah.
There's going to be people up here that are like, yeah, I went and watched that dude at Windsor. I went and watched that guy in Fort Collins or Denver, whatever. There is that extra tie-in, too, where it makes following players a little bit more fun.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can see the Colorado skill kids. They were always going to be the first ones. You know, skill kids don't quite have as much development as big guys. When you talk about development potential and you talk about recruiting an underrated player, the skill guys can kind of get there first because it doesn't take as many years in the weight room, so to speak. And so when you look at Cam Chapa or Braden Monroe or Carver Cheeks, those are all Colorado freshman recruits that we brought in, and they're kind of the first ones now to actually enter the transfer portal with a legitimate opportunity to take it to the FBS level, right? To maybe participate in that revenue share or NIL deal, or just graduate from here and go and play your final year in a different place, maybe a quote unquote bigger league. That's, you know, that to me is not a negative, right? And we're just starting to see the beginnings of that. But what we don't have here, and the reason why we have the lowest number of guys go into the portal of any team in our conference. We tied for the lowest number. And in some cases, teams in our conference have three and four times the number of guys we had go into the portal.
It's insane.
And the biggest part of that is our guys they're not looking to make lateral moves. And I think a lot of teams around the Big Sky, they've built their roster through the portal. They've built it going all over the West, if not all over the country. There is no regional cohesiveness. There's no reason to stay. You might as well, if you're from Texas and Abilene Christian can take you or Lamar or something like that, might as well jump in the portal and see what you can get. And if you have to make a lateral move, make it. At least you're closer to home. We don't have that dynamic. Our guys are looking to stay and maximize themselves here until they really get something, you know, kind of, if not guaranteed, pretty obviously a vertical move.
It is another interesting selling point. We've talked about that too, where you are saying to these guys, yeah, you could come here. You could go all 4 or 5 years now with the potential 5 for 5 or 5 and 5 thing. You could be successful. You might even get looks and go play pro playing 5 year, being here for 5 years. Or you could potentially come here 2 to 3, bring that stock up, and then you've got other opportunities out there. I think that is another unique selling point that is actually pretty crucial now in this day and age.
The very best, you know, I saw this coming up as a coach, but the very best Division I college coaches were celebrating early entries into the NFL draft. And the coaches who were being left behind were saying, we can't allow this. These guys aren't ready. You know, they were complaining about early entry NFL draftees at that time. The best junior college coaches, I recruited the junior colleges heavily early in my career, and the best JC coaches were celebrating their freshmen getting scholarship offers. You know, they weren't trying to hold them back or withhold information to try to keep them for the 2 years that the JC coach could technically keep them. But the most successful guys were actually pushing their freshmen. And if they got those offers and they took advantage of them, they signed scholarships, then they were promoting that. And they were getting better and better high school players who were saying, oh, I only have to go there for 1 year. And now with the transfer portal, that's the new and current dynamic is, are you going to be an old-fashioned coach who's upset about the transfer portal and you're complaining about it and you're trying to like somehow hold your guys back artificially from entering it? Or are you teaching them the right way to transfer, the way that would transfer, the way that would transition their lives positively, fully develop yourself in one place before you go and tackle a challenge at a new place? Overcome hardships, overcome difficulties, be the best you can be in the place that you're at, and then use the transfer portal as the tool that it's meant to be.
Well, and then the other thing is, too, you get them here, and maybe they're like, you know, I did have a really good year, but I have a few things that I'd like to perfect one more time here at UNC. And it sounds kind of weird, I guess, in some ways. It's like they're using UNC, but we're both kind of using each other to get to those goals that you want to achieve. So a player could essentially say, no, I really like Coach Lamb, I like the coaching staff. Obviously, if I can, I want to go to a different place eventually, but I would like to sharpen some of those skills for at least another season. And then who knows? Maybe they maybe followed up with even another year after that.
I mean, there's so many individual stories, and we talked about mine a little bit, like my purpose for being here, right? Like, what am I trying to accomplish here? You could look, again, to bring up a guy like Jack Zibel, we call him Z-Ball, our center, but you know, came here, started as a true freshman, has had every opportunity to leave, go make money in the transfer portal, could be playing Power Four football with the snap of his fingers. When we flip this, win a championship here, the story that he can tell for the rest of his life, and that's why he's staying. You know, he wants to fully develop himself and the team around him here. At least for now, that's the decision today. You know what I mean? I don't know about his future. I can't speak for him. Maybe you can, but have him on the show and allow him to speak for himself. But to me, he's building a story that transcends long decades beyond his experience here. Mathias Price is another one. Had all the big schools in this state. Boulder, CSU wanted him as a linebacker. Well, he's a 6'2". 230-pound running back for us, you know, because that's what he wanted to do it his way, and he believes in himself as a big back. And so those guys will be on the field most likely first snap, first game, and they're trying to do something a little different than what's going on in the rest of the Big Sky, in my opinion. They have a goal a little bit further than, let me maximize myself, get my stats, and move on. I just don't see that that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to build something special right here and then make a new decision every year at the end of the year.
And that just doesn't happen. You don't hear a lot of that throughout the country. The special story, the almost movie-type story of these guys coming together. And they're guys that, hey, these schools wanted me to play linebacker. I don't want to play linebacker. These schools wanted me to be just a depth guy, fifth guy down the line. But we're going to stay here. We're going to go to UNC. Yeah. And we also want to do something that's really awesome that they'll tell a story about rather than just going and grabbing that quick check somewhere else. You just don't see that a lot, Coach.
Yeah, well, here's the conundrum that coaches face now, right? So most of my peers in the conference and most teams around the country, and Indiana's only like thrown gasoline on this fire, they're actually building it with the portal. They're building their programs with the portal. Nothing wrong with that. Indiana just won a national title doing that. You got to have some money, you know. Yeah. You got to have your Mark Cuban to do it successfully at the highest level. And so that's why we're not doing it, right? We're trying a different method. But here's the deal. If as a coach, you're building your team through the portal, how do you preach retention to your team, right?
Right.
Like you're literally recruiting portal kids over the top of your own developmental kids. You're literally espousing your belief in building the portal through production, not building your team through production through the portal, not through player development, not through retention, not through recruiting high school kids. And so to sell that, out of one side of your mouth to your young, you know, your high school recruits or your developmental players, and then to recruit over the top of them, it's speaking out of both sides of your mouth. I don't have that problem. We don't literally, as coaches, we don't even open the portal. We don't even look at it. We're only interested in Colorado kids that might be happen to want to come back to the state that have gone elsewhere. And that's been pretty well publicized. So it's very easy for me to stand in front of the team and say, hey, I believe the portal's a great tool. I hope you use it correctly. Here's how I think you should use it. I'm always one more data point. Come talk to me if you're thinking about it. But I have a vision and a plan for each one of you guys to reach your full potential here, whether that's your, you know, sophomore, junior, senior year. We can talk about that, but mm-hmm. I have a plan for each one of you. At least come and talk to me as you're considering all of your options.
Yeah, that's an interesting point that I haven't really thought on too much is, you know, when you have coaches that are preaching to you, hey, don't leave, don't get in the portal. The grass isn't always greener, man. Wait, isn't that how I got here? That was somebody probably, maybe illegally, told me grass was always greener, and here I am. Yeah. So. Yeah, that would be that's a fascinating. That's another side of this whole NIL thing I haven't spent a lot of time on.
Oh, it's the people aren't looking at it right now, but and I don't know how much you follow it, but if you have a high school son that's being recruited in, let's say the Big Ten, and you've got Indiana, Kurt Cignetti just won a national championship. Boy, that's exciting. That's fantastic. But remember, your son's a high school kid, and almost every player on that Indiana starting offense and defense was a portal kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Matt Rhule at Nebraska. They certainly haven't had as much success, but he's been building it with high school kids, multi-sport athletes, development potential, weight room. You know, where do you send your high schooler? I think
the guy that's
it's very easy to resonate with somebody who says, oh, I'm sending him to Indiana. Mm-hmm. I'm sending him to the very best. You know, okay, yeah, I get that. But I would also get, look, I want my son to be as good as he can be, and I think that the developmental path is not only where he will thrive the most and improve the most, but maybe have the better story, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I say this all the time. It was one of the honors of my life to play at BYU, but I was also I just think of it as a factory, just spitting out players with championship rings, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
I'm one of thousands of players that have been through there with multiple championships and a great experience, right? And that's great, but it just doesn't, to me, it's not the same as turning around a program, as being the catalyst for something, as being the team who shouldn't win and actually does, being a key player, a key cog in that wheel.
It's just, it's so, like I said, it's a great story. It's one we all want to have happen, but in this day and age in college, it just seems like more players, even coaches, are more like, I got to figure out how to get mine. And I'm not like knocking players for doing that. The money's there. Maybe you're not going to go pro, so this is your time to go earn it, whatever. But you just don't see the stories, like you said, I think on one of our first podcasts, they don't write books and make movies about teams that are supposed to win.
Yeah.
But there is this mentality with your roster that really believes this whole – they believe your messaging. They believe it's not stale. They believe everything, and it's actually really special, especially in this day and age.
Well, it's easy, right? Because it's authentic. Like we're not trying to be something we're not. None of our players are allowed to do that. I'm not going to let them get away with that. They all know that in terms of our modest revenue share, guys. I've told them all, hey, if anybody says they're getting more than you, bring them in here. We'll talk about it. we have set up a tiered system. Where there's only two tiers. You're either in the top quartile of our team and you're getting a share of our whatever our revenue is. It's, like I said, it's very modest compared to every other team in our conference. But it's real and it's authentic in the way that we recruit. Now, I don't know if you've noticed, I keep track of this, but like with Indiana, with Kurt Cignetti, once the information came out about Mark Cuban getting a bunch of money and getting behind the NIL mm-hmm. and the revenue share and building that roster with Kurt Cignetti, and then the president of Indiana also said, look, we put this in motion long before we hired Kurt Cignetti, right? And so everybody's trying to take their little share right now. Well, then some reporters asked Kurt Cignetti about it, and he was like, well, we didn't spend that much on the roster
because
there was a reported number, but he wouldn't give the number.
Right.
I'll give the number right now. You know, like it's not like I'm proud of it. I'm proud of the fact that we have the smallest number. I want our players to have as much as possible, but we only have what we have, mm-hmm. right? So like you're not going to see me out there like showing, trying to be a flashy budget guy. We have what we have, and I think we can win with it.
That whole Indiana thing's crazy too with the Mark Cuban stuff. This is what I've been talking about. Like if you're Mark Cuban, I mean, I know why he gives, but why? Where does that money go and what are those guys doing to get that money? And that's where I think we're running into these NIL questions. That's why NIL goes coming in saying, wait a second, you can't just give them $1 million and then go about your day. What's he doing for that millions of dollars? We talked a little bit about that last week.
He did it.
Yeah.
And now he's got, I mean, this is a guy, you know, a billionaire who has the capacity to buy a national championship. Mm-hmm. At a school that doesn't win in football, hasn't won in football, he hangs out at the bars in Bloomington with the students, right? Like that's how much Indiana is in his blood, and a buttoned up guy. You know, if you watch Shark Tank or listen, like he's on it. Very intelligent guy, but he decided he was going to do that and did it, and he had great pieces around him. This is not to take away anything, but it's interesting to see now from the president to the head coach. You know, trying to take their share of the credit, and Mark Cuban's just in the background going, I built this.
What is the, so is that what it is? Because I've asked this too. Why these kids are, a lot of people are making a lot of money now that aren't just coaches or ADs. Why for a booster to give crazy amounts of money? I get it. If you're a millionaire and you give $10,000, okay. But we've got millionaire billionaires giving out millions of dollars. What is it other than just to say, I built that, like Mark Cuban? What is that? Is that pretty much it?
That's a powerful thing. I mean, look at all the things around the world that have been, you know, built. A person that built it, but to stand back and say, I built that, you know, and so it's just a format now for people that have those means to do that. And I don't know how long it will last, right? Because for every Mark Cuban effort, there have been a lot of other big fan bases and boosters that have poured in. I mean, you look at Oklahoma State and what they've poured into it. Now Texas Tech, like you need a national title to have it pay off in that way. When you're putting in the most money, you want the most result. And so, again, not to take any credit away from the players and the coaches at Indiana, but they're on a different mission than what we're on.
Well, and you see the opposite of what happened with Mark Cuban, you get the Troy Aikmans. Yeah. You know, Troy, what was it, UCLA, when Troy's like, I'm done. I'm not going to donate anymore because I threw in, I don't know how much, maybe it's $1 million, for a certain quarterback there. And not only did he leave after 1 year, I didn't get any kind of a thank you, appreciate it, whatever. He flat out said it. I'm done. Yeah. Obviously, I don't want that for programs like yours. I want, because I know you guys are doing the right things, but there are a lot of those boosters that are just throwing so much money out there. They don't handle that booster the right way, and then they walk out, and they don't see the success either. So you wonder with certain guys like Troy how long they're going to keep doing it.
Yeah, that dynamic is kind of incredible that it would occur. But again, look at the guy they paid, the quarterback. I mean, if you just take a broad look at what's going on, you can see what the coach stands for. You can see what the player that they're paying stood for. It was always a disaster from the beginning. It was never going to work.
Yeah,
and we're not doing that here. Our rev share guys are actually tied to community service.
Yeah, and I love that we've talked about that a lot. I think on this podcast and on my show, what your mission is.
Yeah, there's not going to be a lack of gratitude coming from our guys. It's specifically set up that way. It has nothing to do with their talent. And here's the biggest difference: we've spent zero extra money. So we call it over awarding, whether it's NIL, revenue share, whatever. When you get more than a scholarship, that's an over award. We have not over rewarded a recruit. We have not over-rewarded a recruit. We're the only team left in the conference that has not enticed a recruit to come here by saying, here's your scholarship and then here's your plus. We've not done a plus. The most we've recruited with is a scholarship.
Wow. And that's, again, very rare, even in the conference, you know, with what's going on.
Yeah. I mean, and part of it's just, you know, what's right for us. If I go and do that, we can only do that for a couple of guys. I think that creates more harm than good with our overall roster. And so there's it's not that like I'm not trying to take the high road. I'm just trying to take the UNC road and take an authentic road to a championship. And I think you have to look at your means and your resources to do that.
Well, it's fun to document this program with you, Coach. Man, we covered a lot of ground today.
We did.
We went all over the place. That's typically like a late May type of show. You know, we're all over the place. But we'll be excited to get into more X's and O's, hopefully here in the next couple of weeks.
It's crazy to come in here kind of like without a clear plan and then kind of get my heart rate up and like start to get passionate about some stuff.
It's the thing, man. You know, there's just so many different topics that we can get into. And it's an ever-evolving college football scene. So we're never without a topic to really bust into.
Love it. You do a great job of just teeing it up. Yeah. Letting me swing away.
Appreciate it, Coach. Yeah. We'll catch up with you next week, my friend.
Thank you.
Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.